The age of apostasy. The power of the ecclesiarchy spread into every facet of imperial life. From the humble miners and clerks, through imperial guard and navy officers, to planetary governors and high lords of terror themselves, everybody was adherent to the imperial creed, in theory, at least. Frequently, the High Lords would take their lead from the views of the Ecclesiarch, believing that he was the mouth of the Emperor, a belief the Ministerium did nothing to contradict. Soon, the Ecclesiarchy was indirectly dictating imperial law, organizing armies, deciding which threats gained priority, and where to direct imperial resources. As the grip of the Ecclesiarchy grew, elements of the Imperium railed against such control. In the High Lord's councils, the Fabricator General of the Adeptus Mechanicus opposed the will of the Ecclesiarchy, and the Chapter Masters of the Space Marines also viewed Imperial orders with doubt. Following their lead, the Administratum began to fight against the pervasive force of the Ecclesiarchy. Angered by their loss of control, the Administratum began to re-establish itself as the commanding, binding power within the Imperium. So began a feud that has lasted 7,000 years to the present. The Administratum exercised its influence in a number of ways, undermining the authority of the Ecclesiarch, influencing votes in the Council of the High Lords, and positioning its own loyal followers in powerful posts. From the late 34th to the early 35th millennium, the power of the Ecclesiarchy waned. Following the election of a series of disastrously weak and incompetent ecclesiarchs, the Administratum managed to wrest much of its control back from the Ministerium. As time passed, the Administratum gained dominance once more. To the populace at large, the Ecclesiarchy was as mighty, all-seeing, and powerful as ever. But behind the scenes, the Administratum was dictating the agenda of the Holy Synod. In an attempt to escape the clutches of the High Lords of the Administratum, Ecclesiarch Benedine VI moved the Holy Synod and the upper echelons of the Adeptus Ministerium to the planet of Aphelia 7 in the Segmentum Tempestus. This had been Benedin's diocese as a cardinal and was possibly the richest planet after Terra and Mars. The ecclesiarchal palaces on Ophelia covered nearly 90,000 square miles and soared 4,000 meters into the sky. They were only rivaled by the imperial palace on Earth. Separated from the designs of the Administratum by sheer distance, the power of the Ecclesiarchy grew again, with a succession of punishing increases in tithes. The resources of the Ministerium reached its height. The cardinals of different dioceses competed with each other to erect the most magnificent monuments, to build the largest and most ostentatious temples and cathedrals. The purges of so-called heretical cults increased significantly, as any opposition to the word of the Ecclesiarch was ruthlessly crushed. Separated from the Administratum, the Ecclesiarchy began to form its own fleets of interstellar ships and armies. The Fretaris Templars, as these forces came to be known, numbered many commercial transports and warships, and dozens of fighting armies, each of which rivaled an Imperial Guard regiment in strength. All the while, the Administratum buildings on Earth were left to ruin and crumble. In the middle of the 35th millennium, nearly 300 years after moving to Ophelia, Gregor XI was elected to the position of Ecclesiarch. A deeply spiritual man, Gregor was seen as the next step in the Ecclesiarchy's growth, a fresh outlook to spur on what had increasingly become a stagnant Holy Synod. However, the Cardinals were totally unprepared for what would come next. Gregor announced that the Adeptus Ministorum would return to Earth. Although this was vigorously opposed both within and outside the Ecclesiarchy, Gregor felt that the true centre of the faith should be Terra, the home world of humanity. None could dissuade him from this course, and though it took him 12 years to organise the return, with the time needed for marshalling his resources, the physical requirements of warp travel, the doors of the ecclesiarchal palaces on Terra were finally opened once more. The refurbishment of the palaces took a heavy toll on the already thinly stretched resources of the Ecclesiarchy, their funds depleted by the extremely expensive business of relocating to Terra. The Ecclesiarchy had to increase tithes even further to balance the costs of the rebuilding. As the rebuilding progressed, Gregor began laying the groundwork for other changes within the structure of the Adeptus Ministorum, changes that were seen as radical by many of his peers within the Holy Synod. Again, he refused to bow to opinion, but before his innovations could be put into action, Gregor died of food poisoning. Tears were wept at his funeral. It is said that 6 million followers filed past his open-topped casket, and the cardinals spoke of a great man that had been taken from them too soon. However, no sooner had the tears dried and Gregor's body been interned in the great mausoleum of remembrance than a new, more conservative ecclesiarch was elected, and the ministerium continued as it had done before. Descent into anarchy. Fueled by the growing demands of the cardinals, ecclesiarchy tithes were increased once more. Unfortunately, much of the populace was already stretched to breaking point, and this further increase was seen by many as unnecessarily exorbitant. Across many worlds of the Imperium, the populace openly rebelled against the ecclesiarchy and refused to pay. Even planetary governors spoke out against the excesses of the ministerium, but they went unheeded. The ecclesiarchy responded with a vengeance, sending its armies to crush any sign of revolt and executing higher officials as heretics. Alexis the 21st used the officio assassinorum to eliminate several governors who redirected their tithes to pay for their own planetary defense forces, and is quoted as saying they had forsworn the emperor's protection for their own worldly gains. The tithes were used to build ever larger temples, to line the highways of planets with statues of past ecclesiarchs, and to decorate the ecclesiarchal palaces with the rarest metals and gems. The unrest continued, massive uprisings spreading across the Imperium, only for the Fraternus Templars of the Ecclesiarchy to arrive and quell any insurgencies. All those who defied the rites of the Ecclesiarchy were decried as heretics and suitably punished. Some thought the Ecclesiarchy's bloody methods of control were excessive, but it was nothing compared to what was to come. Even as the Imperium struggled to survive amidst bushfire wars and a lack of true leadership from Earth, further disasters befell humanity. In the early 36th millennium, the incidence of warp storms started increasing. Travel between all but the closest stars became risky, and as the centuries passed, the warp soon became a tumultuous mass of roiling tempests and storms. Navigation became difficult everywhere, and hundreds of systems were totally isolated. With the resources of the Administratum and Ecclesiarchy turned towards their power struggle, much of the Imperium devolved into anarchy. In those few worlds still accessible by starships, the power of the Ecclesiarchy was brutally enforced by the Templars, and in any slight deviation from the holy decrees was marked as heretical, with the burnings and hangings which attended that crime. Seeing the turmoil racking the Imperium, Chaos Raiders poured forth from the Eye of Terror to attack and despoil their ancient foes. Orc warlords rampaged across vast tracts of the galaxy, and there was nobody who could halt them. On the planets cut off from Terror, Chaos and Gene-Stealer cults rose in rebellion and overthrew their governments, damning entire worlds to slavery and slaughter. Those worlds not overrun by alien attackers strove to retain what they could. As time passed, even the most advanced worlds were brought to their knees. As before, with no central guidance from the Adeptus Ministerium, even the worship of the Emperor began to devolve into a series of cults and sects. And in the trying times of those centuries, those who were once brothers under the light of the Emperor fought against each other to assert their religious ideals. Much of the Imperium was under a malaise of pre-apocalyptic doom. Crazed zealots denounced the Ecclesiarchy and claimed the Emperor was displeased with their greed and excesses, sending the warp storms as a test to judge the truly faithful and set them apart from heretics and sinners. Spurred on by these statements, citizens turned to flagellation and self-mutilation to prove their belief and faith. Whole populations became seething masses of despair-laden cults, each trying to outdo the other in their torturous devotion to the Emperor. Strange splinter groups grew in power, preaching extreme causes. Bloodthirsty pogroms eradicated many innocents as the populace tried to stem the wrath of the God Emperor. In many communities, any small deviation from what was deemed normal brought instant death to a child and its family. Whole populations were enslaved or slaughtered, deemed heathens for some real or suspected deviancy. High Lord Van Dyer. The name most famously connected with the Age of Apostasy and the architect of the Reign of Blood was Gorg Van Dyer, 361st High Lord of the Administratum. Van Dyer had a hard reputation and was a staunch opponent of the Ecclesiarchy's dominance. It was rumoured he used assassins and blackmail to achieve the rank of High Lord, and none within the Administratum dared oppose him. Shortly before his ascendancy to the vaulted rank of High Lord, Van Dyer was instrumental in the election of Ecclesiarch Paulus III, a degenerate incompetent who was easily controlled by Van Dyer and his followers. Once he had established his position within the Administratum, Van Dyer moved in to take over the Ecclesiarchy. While other High Lords had manipulated the Adeptus Ministerium covertly, Van Dyer was brazenly open about his intents. In the end, Van Dyer personally led a hand-picked contingent of Imperial Guard officers into the Ecclesiarchal Palace and overthrew Paulus III in what can only be called a military coup. Declaring Paulus to be a traitor to humanity, he had the Ecclesiarch summarily shot and took upon himself the dual role of High Lord of the Administratum and Ecclesiarch. Shaken and terrified, the Holy Synod could do nothing to oppose Van Dyer as he set about eradicating any within the Ministerium who opposed him. As Van Dyer's wrath fell upon the cardinals, all those not already fleeing elected to return to Ophelia to escape the High Lord's clutches. However, fate thwarted them, and as their ship entered the warp, it was engulfed by a huge storm and they were never seen again. Van Dyer claimed it was the will of the Emperor, evidence of his divine right to reign over the Imperium in the Emperor's name. Van Dyer elected cardinals of his own choosing to fill the mahogany benches of the Holy Synod chambers. He chose a calculated mix of weak-willed fools and brilliant geniuses with just the right amount of cruelty to ensure they would enforce his will without any qualms. The High Lord now had total, unopposed control of both the Ecclesiarchy and the Administratum. The Imperium was about to face its darkest time since the Horus Heresy. The Reign of Blood. Van Dyer was insane, a paranoid megalomaniac who saw plots and intrigue everywhere. His mind was twisted in every way, and he delighted in torturing his victims, declaring he was purifying their souls for the Emperor. He expected his every word to be recorded for posterity, and was constantly accompanied by a plethora of scribes whose job was to note down everything he said or any particular innovative tortures he inflicted in the converted catacombs beneath the ecclesiarchal palace. His mood would swing violently, laughing one moment and murderously angry the next. Van Dyer would often fall into a trance-like state, during which he would argue with himself in a mumbling voice, and on other occasions he would shout out loud for no apparent reason. He claimed he was receiving messages from the Emperor. These meditative periods would always be followed by bouts of excessive violence. He had a huge 3D map of the Imperium installed in his audience chamber, with a constant relay of current warpstorm activity. As soon as a world was reachable, he would dispatch a warfleet to establish control. The Reign of Blood affected the whole Imperium. Sycophantic army and navy officers were only too ready to execute Van Dyer's orders, virus bombing the hive world of Kalena without reason, invading the farmlands of Boris Minor, and enslaving every female child under 12 years of age, using the orbital batteries of Jehanna to melt the planet's ice caps, drowning nearly 4 billion people in the resultant floods. The list goes on and on, meticulously recorded by Van Dyer's scribes. Van Dyer would dictate long speeches bemoaning the wretched state of the Imperium, demanding justice against the cross-section of humanity that was his current object of hate. Daughters of the Emperor. Early in the Reign of Blood, Van Dyer's extensive network of spies notified the High Lord of a particular sect which had previously eluded the attention of the Ministerium. It was a small cult, perhaps only 500 members in total, on the little-known agri-world of San Luar. Van Dyer was furious when he first heard of the group, but as his agents continued to explain the nature of the cult, his interest swerved from homicidal intent to covetousness. The sect, known as the Daughters of the Emperor, contained only female members and devoted itself to worship of the Emperor through inner purity. The Daughters of the Emperor studied the ancient arts of war, using a taxing learning process to clear their minds of all worldly considerations, honing their skills over their entire lives. His interest piqued. Van Dyer ordered a ship to prepare immediately for a journey to San Luar and announced he would honour the world with an ecclesiarchal visit. With an entourage of nearly 100,000 servants and soldiers, Van Dyer arrived on San Luar. As the miles-long procession made its way to the Temple of the Daughters of the Emperor, Vandire's agents moved ahead of the ecclesiarchal train, forcing the meagre population of the farms and towns to line the streets and show due respect. Those who failed to cooperate were executed as heretics, regardless of their reasons. Every newly born babe and ancient elder were dragged from their homes to witness the arrival of the ecclesiarch. The crowds were supplied with laurels and gifts to present to Vandire, showing him their scented flowers and crying their praise at gunpoint. Holovids of the various ceremonies performed by Vandire were spread throughout the accessible Imperium, and the propaganda was used to further enforce the power of the ecclesiarch. Upon reaching the temple, Vandire found the gates barred against him and was informed by a young daughter of the Emperor that the Order did not recognize his authority, expecting the customary explosion of rage and destruction. Vandire's terrified functionaries feared for their lives. However, Vandire had anticipated such an insolent response and had already considered the solution. He ordered the daughters of the Emperor to witness a feat that would prove he had the favour of the Emperor. With a small bodyguard of men, Vandire entered the temple and was conducted to the main hall. Before the assembled order, Vandire knelt in supplication to the Emperor, praying for his protection, clutching the ecclesiarchal Rosarius in both hands. Standing again, he ordered one of his guards to shoot him with a las pistol. The officer refused at first, begging with Vandire not to endanger himself. Vandire's response is quoted as, "There is no danger. I have the Emperor's protection. Do you doubt that?" The officer had no answer to such a question, loaded as it was with subtle malice and the threat of punishment. He duly raised his pistol, aimed at the ecclesiarch's chest, and pulled the trigger. As the bolt of energy struck Vandire, there was an explosion of light, blinding all who stood in the hall. As they recovered their senses, they saw Vandire standing totally unharmed in the centre of the chamber, leaning on his bone walking cane. Almost as one, the guardsmen and the daughters of the Emperor fell to their knees in worship. As he later boasted to his scribes, Vandire had gambled that the isolated daughters of the Emperor would have never heard of a Rosarius or the conversion field generator it contained. Taking oaths of fealty from the daughters of the Emperor, Vandire elevated the sect to the position of ecclesiarchal bodyguard and took them back to Terra with him. From then on, the warrior women became his personal retinue of soldiers and companions, and Vandire renamed them the Brides of the Emperor. They were trained by the best teachers in the Imperial Guard to combine their own skills with the modern weapons of war, and word of their dedication to the protection of Vandire spread through the Imperium. They were his constant guardians and his silent executioners, who would kill with a word from their lord. The Brides not only served as Vandire's bodyguard, but also as servants and companions. They tasted the High Lord's food, fed him when he fell weak with illness, nursed his frail body, and entertained him with singing, dancing, and other more exotic skills. For all their gaiety on occasion, the Brides of the Emperor were still hardened fighters, and when the Holy Synod tried to have Vandire assassinated a few years later, the Brides went into the meeting chambers, locked the doors, and emerged an hour later carrying the severed heads of every cardinal present. This history continues with Sebastian Thor in part 3. Thanks for watching, everybody. If you enjoyed this content, please do remember to give me a like, subscribe if you're not subscribed, and let me know in the comments what you think. Big thanks to everybody supporting the channel. You can see your names here. Thank you all very much. We will be back again with more very, very soon. Cheers.